I'm Arlene Ford, and I'll be reading the front pages of the Hartford Courant and New York Times. Let's begin. There are two related photos on the front page. In the first photo, we see in the foreground a young girl who is on a swing. She's wearing glasses. She has on a white long sleeve shirt, blue jeans, and little boots. And in the background, we see a man standing there who is her dad. And then in the next photo, we see her dad giving her a push on a swing. And I'll read what the caption says. A day with dad. Families across Connecticut are taking advantage of mild weather for ongoing fall fun. That led to swings and smiles for Taylor Williams, 6, who recently enjoyed the ride with the help from her father, Mike Williams, both of Manchester, at Charter Oak Park in Manchester, Connecticut. Could receive some much-needed rain later this week, forecast show. And then in the next photo, we are looking down at what appears to be a fire that the fire officials are trying to put out. And this is after an attack, a Russian rocket basically hit this building in Ukraine's East Poltava region. That's it for the photos on the front page of the Courant. Let's now take a look at the photos on the front page of the New York Times. In the first photo, we're looking at, it appears to be a family. There's a man, a woman, and two children. One of the children is a toddler, and they are on a moped, or motorcycle, I would say. And the father has a duffel bag, and it looks like a small piece of luggage in front of him on this bike. And the mother has a duffel bag on her shoulder. And basically, this family is leaving an area in Haiti that is a subject to gang violence. And around them, you see the same thing. You see other motorbikes, people on motorbikes with their bags, trying to escape as well. And we'll be doing a story on that later on in the broadcast. The next photo is from Berkeley, California, and we're looking at a homeless encampment, and we're seeing tents. In the background, there's an individual standing there as though he's walking down the street. And then you see, it looks like debris just piled up on the sidewalk next to this encampment. And we'll be doing a story on this later on in the broadcast as well. And then our next photo is that of Pat Koch Thaler, who is the sister of former New York Mayor Ed Koch. And in this photo, she's wearing glasses, has on a red dress, and the gist of this story is she is 92 and a half years old, and after battling cancer for 22 years, she's at the point now where her tumors are inoperable. So she has decided to end her life with the assistance of a doctor, and she selected November 16th as the date to do such. And we'll do a story on that later on in the broadcast as well. That's it for photos on the front page of the New York Times. Let's now move on to our lead story of the day. Drones, missiles batter Ukraine. Biden to allow deeper fire into Russia as fighting ramps up. This is out of Kyiv. Russia on Sunday launched a massive drone and missile attack on Ukraine, described by officials as the largest in recent months, targeting energy infrastructure and killing civilians. Hours later, President Joe Biden authorized for the first time the use of U.S.-supplied long-range missiles by Ukraine to strike inside Russia after extensive lobbying by Ukrainian officials. The weapons are likely to be used in response to North Korea's decision to send thousands of troops to support Russia in the Kursk region, where Ukraine mounted a military incursion over the summer. It is the second time the U.S. has permitted the use of Western weapons inside Russian territory within limits after permitting the use of HIMARS, and that's HIMARS systems, a shorter-range weapon to stem Russia's advance in Kharkiv region in May. President Volodymyr Zelensky said that Russia had launched a total of 120 missiles and 90 drones in a large-scale attack across Ukraine. Various types of drones were deployed, he said, including Iranian-made Shahids, as well as cruise, ballistic, and aircraft-launched ballistic missiles. Ukrainian defenses shot down 144 out of 210 air targets, Ukraine's Air Force reported later on Sunday. The enemy's target was our energy infrastructure throughout Ukraine. Unfortunately, there is damage to objects from hits and falling debris. In Mykolaiv, two people were killed and six others were injured, including two children, Zelensky said. The combined drone and missile attack was the most powerful in 3 months, according to the head of Kyiv's city military administration, Serhiy Popko. A thermal power plant operated by a private energy company, DTEC, was seriously damaged, the company said. Explosions were heard across Ukraine on Sunday, including in the capital, Kyiv, the key southern port of Odessa, and the country's west and central regions, according to local reports. The operational command of Poland's armed forces wrote on X that Polish and allied aircraft, including fighter jets, have been mobilized in Polish airspace because of the massive Russian attack on neighboring Ukraine. The steps were aimed to provide safety in Poland's border areas, it said. Russia's defense ministry on Sunday acknowledged carrying out a mass missile and drone attack on critical energy infrastructure in Ukraine, but claimed all targeted facilities were tied to Kyiv's military industry. Although Ukraine's nuclear plants were not directly impacted, several electrical substations on which they depend suffered further damage, the UN's nuclear energy watchdog said in a statement Sunday. According to the International Atomic Energy Agency, only two of Ukraine's nine operational reactors continue to generate power at full capacity. Ukrainian drones also struck Russia. As this brutal war of attrition grinds toward its 1,000th day on Tuesday, neither side seems eager to negotiate. President-elect Donald Trump has said he could quickly end the war, although it is unclear how or in whose favor he might tip the scales. This backdrop appears to be driving Russia's strategy in eastern Ukraine, according to Phillips O'Brien, a professor of strategic studies at the University of St. Andrews, Scotland. Trump could try to force an end to the war by halting the supply of weapons to Ukraine. If Trump cuts aid to Ukraine and a ceasefire leads to a frozen conflict, Russia wants to secure as much territory as it can now, O'Brien said. For Ukraine, the key to a ceasefire would be guarantees from the West that it won't allow Russia to reinvade. Otherwise, O'Brien said, a ceasefire is a recipe for constant instability in Europe. Biden boosts rainforest aid on historic trip to Amazon. Tour of region part of president's visit to South America, and this is from Nas, Brazil. President Joe Biden witnessed the devastation of drought up close Sunday as the first sitting American president to visit the Amazon rainforest, declaring that nobody can reverse the clean energy revolution that's underway in America, even as the incoming Trump administration is poised to scale back efforts to combat climate change. The Amazon region, which is about the size of Australia, stores huge amount of the world's carbon dioxide, a greenhouse gas driving climate change. But development is rapidly depleting the world's largest tropical rainforest, and rivers are drying up. Biden said the fight against climate change has been a defining cause of his presidency. He's pushed for cleaner air, water, and energy, including legislation that marked the most substantial federal investment in history to fight global warming. But he's about to hand the nation over to President-elect Donald Trump, who is highly unlikely to prioritize the Amazon or anything related to climate change, which he has cast as a hoax. Trump has pledged to again pull out of the Paris Agreement, a global pact forged to avert the threat of catastrophic climate change, and he says he'll rescind unspent funds in energy efficiency legislation. It's true, some may seek to deny or delay the clean energy revolution that's underway in America, Biden said, but nobody can reverse it. Nobody, not when so many people, regardless of party or politics, are enjoying its benefits. The question now, he said, is which government will stand in the way and which will seize the enormous opportunity. His trip comes as the UN Climate Conference is underway in Esbjergen, Brazil, will hold the talks next year. During a helicopter tour, Biden saw severe erosion, ships grounded in one of the Amazon River's main tributaries, and fire damage. He also passed over a wildlife refuge for endangered species of monkeys and birds and the expansive waters where the Negro River tributary flows into the Amazon. He was joined by Carlos Nobre, a Nobel Prize-winning scientist and expert on how climate change is harming the Amazon. Biden met indigenous leaders, introducing his daughters and granddaughter, and visited a museum at the gateway to the Amazon, where indigenous women shook maracas as part of a welcoming ceremony. He then signed a U.S. proclamation designating November 17th as International Conservation Day. The Amazon is home to indigenous communities and 10% of Earth's biodiversity. About two-thirds of the Amazon lies within Brazil. Scientists say its devastation poses a catastrophic threat to the planet. The fight to protect our planet is literally a fight for humanity, Biden said. His administration announced plans last year for a $500 million contribution to the American Fund, the most significant international effort to preserve the rainforest, primarily financed by Norway. The U.S. has said it has provided $50 million, and the White House announced Sunday an additional $50 million contribution. Biden's trip is significant, but we can't expect concrete results from this visit, said Sully Araujo, former head of the Brazilian Environmental Protection Agency and public policy coordinator with the nonprofit Climate Observatory. She doubts a single penny will go to the Amazon Fund once Trump is back in office. The incoming administration is highly unlikely to prioritize the Amazon or anything related to climate change. The forest has been suffering 2 years of historic drought that have dried up waterways. It has made way for wildfires that have burned an area larger than Switzerland and choked cities near and far with smoke. Israeli strike in Beirut kills spokesman for Hezbollah. And this is out of Beirut. A rare Israeli strike in central Beirut killed the Hezbollah militant group's chief spokesman Sunday, while an Israeli strike in northern Gaza's Beit Lahia killed at least 30 people, the director of a hospital there told the Associated Press. Mohammed Afif was killed in a strike on the Arab Socialist Ba'ath Party's office in Beirut, according to a Hezbollah official who was not authorized to brief reporters and spoke on condition of anonymity. Afif had been especially visible after all-out war erupted between Israel and Iran-backed Hezbollah in September. Israel's military, in a statement, said he wielded a significant influence over Hezbollah's military operations and glorified and incited attacks on Israel. It was the latest killing of senior Hezbollah officials. On Sunday night, another strike in central Beirut hit a computer shop, killing 2 and wounding 22, Lebanon's Health Ministry said. These strikes occurred as Lebanese officials consider a United States-led ceasefire proposal. Israel also bombed several buildings in Beirut's southern suburbs, where Hezbollah has long been headquartered, after warning people to evacuate. There was no Israeli evacuation warning before the strike near a busy intersection in central Beirut that killed Afif. An AP photographer there saw 4 bodies and 4 wounded people. I was asleep and awoke from the sound of the strike and people screaming and cars and gunfires, said witness Suhail Halabi. I was startled, honestly. This is the first time I experienced it so close. After the second strike in central Beirut on Sunday night, firefighters struggled to control the blaze in the busy residential neighborhood of Mar Elias. Hezbollah began firing rockets, missiles, and drones into Israel the day after Hamas's attack, October 7th, 2023 attack, ignited the war in Gaza. Israel launched retaliatory airstrikes in Lebanon, and the conflict escalated. Israeli forces invaded Lebanon on October 1st. On Sunday, Israel's military said mobile artillery batteries had crossed into Lebanon and began attacking Hezbollah targets, the first time artillery was launched within Lebanese territory. Lebanon's army, largely on the sidelines, said an Israeli strike Sunday hit a military site in southeastern Al-Mari, killing 2 soldiers and wounding 2 others. In Gaza, Hossam Abu Safia, director of the Kamal Adwan Hospital in Beit Lahia, said there were dozens of wounded after the Israeli strike there, and others likely were still under the rubble. An Israeli military statement earlier said it conducted several strikes on terrorist targets in Beit Lahia. It said efforts to evacuate civilians from the active war zone there continued. Earlier, officials said Israeli strikes killed 6 in Nusayrat and 4 in Barij, 2 built-up refugee camps in central Gaza dating to the 1948 war surrounding Israel's creation. 2 people were killed in a strike on Gaza's main north-south highway, according to Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in the central city of Deir al-Balah. Israel's military said 2 soldiers were killed in northern Gaza on Sunday. It is now 19 minutes after the hour. Morning front pages for November 18, 2024 will continue after your national and local forecasts. The national forecast: thunderstorms from eastern Texas and Louisiana up into the south western Missouri may bring flash flooding, hail, damaging winds, and isolated tornadoes. Heavy rain in Kansas, much of Nebraska, Iowa, and southern Minnesota may potentially lead to flash flooding. The plains will be fairly windy with gusts above 40 miles per hour in many places. This is especially the case for northern Texas into Oklahoma. Rain and snow showers will cover much of the higher terrain in the interior west. A storm in the northwest will bring showers to western Oregon and Washington. There may also be spotty showers in upstate New York and northern New England. The southeast and mid-Atlantic will largely be mild, dry, and mostly to partly sunny. Now for your local forecast. Monday, mild with variable clouds, breezy in the afternoon, high 64, low 42. Tuesday, breezy in the morning, otherwise mostly sunny, high 57, low 34. Wednesday, mostly sunny, high 56, low 42. Thursday, morning rain, otherwise cloudy and cooler, high 49, low 39. And Friday, occasional rain and drizzle, high 47, low 40.